Sure, my name is Jorge Arauz.
We're on the climate train headed towards New York City. Are you intending to participate, Jorge?
Yes, absolutely.
Earlier, there were some teach-ins where people were invited to speak about something they thought significant, and we ended up in the car where there were people presenting around spiritual issues, existential issues. To the extent that I heard them present, all except you presented technical information about what moves them and might move us to attend this large manifestation to enact something that is beneficial for the future. You asked a series of questions. Could you repeat one of the questions?
Sure. I think one of the questions was, how does your love for the earth influence your daily interactions in the world? That was the first question.
Right. And that's a profound question. Most people don't associate the earth with their daily interaction.
Yeah. Sometimes, actually, yeah, the word association is important because I think we tend to insulate things and behave in different spheres of reality without letting the connections between them come to the surface.
Speak about how you arrived at the questions and why you chose that approach.
Sure. I think the questions come from my background as a facilitator in a project called Alternatives to Violence Project. One of the basics for this project model is Paulo Freire's work. Paulo Freire is an educator from Brazil, and he believed that the task of the educator was to let the knowledge from the individual come out instead of dropping data into his or her brain. Let the knowledge of the person come to the surface. The one way to do it is through questions.
Paulo Freire worked with indigenous people whose knowledge tended to be innate to their daily experience, not derived from formal education, which is in contrast to most of the people on this train who have been heavily educated. I think somebody like Ivan Illich would say heavily indoctrinated. Is that a name you know, Illich?
Ivan Illich.
Yeah.
Paul Tillich, maybe. But not a name. Yeah. What I would add to it is that because he was working with poor people, what was important for him was to empower them. And again, asking questions, letting them be acquainted with their own knowledge was a form of empowering them. And I think it was beyond the cultural boundaries. In my own culture, and I think in yours perhaps, children were not supposed to speak in the presence of adults unless given permission. And children were supposed to receive the advice of their elders, but their own voice was not valued. So, this is a different approach. Asking people and letting people ask themselves, what's going on within me and what do I know? What can I say about this from my own experience? What's my own judgment? And it's important for us to learn to trust the witness of truth that is within us.
Could you expand on that a little bit?
Perhaps that these words also have some background in my religious faith. There was a man in England during the 1600s. His name was George Fox. He was searching the world to find answers to his questions. deep religious, personal, existential questions. And he discovered that the answers were in his own heart. With using his own imagery, his own the images of his own cultural background, he identified as that as Jesus, the Christ. But he also named it as the seed, the light that comes with every man and woman to guide them in life, in the world. It's a point from the Gospel of John. So, and it's my experience, it's true, every person has a sense of what is right. There is a sense of fairness and justice, and there is a taste for truth in the heart of every human being. And our task is to get connected with it and to help each other get connected with it. And that's what I was trying to do with my questions.
Are you saying that every person is born with that potential?
Yes.
Even those people who operate the levers of power in this system, which is very violent, have that capacity if they could be reached?
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the biggest dangers of the political game in the political struggle is that it can bring people to places of adversarial positions, and where the only outcome or most likely outcome is going to be a violent confrontation. But the good politician, the wise politician, and Gandhi is one example of that, knows that he's fighting, but he also knows that the person that he's fighting against is his friend, and he's not aiming to destroy that person, but to bring that person into the knowledge that he has of what is truth, and to help that person waking up to that sense of fairness in his own heart.
This would be a person who would be considered normal. Hitler had slated the whole of the Polish population for elimination, the Ukrainian population for elimination, the Jews and the Gypsies and the deformed children for elimination. And it started on an industrial level to exterminate human beings.
Absolutely.
Based on his categorization of them as Untermensch.
Correct. That's one of the most difficult questions of history and philosophy, psychology.
The Turks did it to the Armenians. The Zionists are doing it to the Palestinians.
Yes. And not always we are, those people who are doing that are deranged. Something that I would like to say about Hitler. One mistake that we make when we discuss historical events is to see them as the expression of individual wills. And Hitler and his Nazi party were not isolated events in the history of Germany, are the direct result of irrational, deeply unjust policies by governments that won the First World War. And also, they are the result of a concerted, maybe not concerted, but that a shared effort to annihilate the Bolsheviks and annihilate those social democratic elements, most radical elements in the social democratic movement in Germany. So Hitler was allowed to be first because of the cruel imposition of sanctions against the defeated people of Germany, and two, because of the turning of the closing eyes to the ignoring and the abetting of his policies of extermination and repression of the communists and the social democrats.
and his policies of eugenics that he started to introduce before the mass extermination, the concept of eugenics, ridding the society of inferior peoples. Those he studied by sending his representatives to the United States,
yeah,
where eugenics was an academic pursuit supported by some of the most prominent members of the society. We talk about that and the violence that underlies it.
Well, I think the matrix from which the racial policies of Hitler emerged, where actually he had the racial studies, so-called studies, of Europe, in Europe, in the United States, like you mentioned, and also the long, long history of racism and anti-Semitism in Germany, in Europe. Now, you're asking me to talk about the violence of racism? Is that what you expect?
Yes, if you think that's an appropriate element.
Absolutely. What I think needs to be emphasized from my perspective is that racism is one form of oppression among many. And sometimes it seems to me that we tend to be focused on that particular one to the detriment of the attention necessary to other forms of oppression. And oppression is pervasive in our societies. Oppression is pervasive to our history. And oppression is a reality of our own souls. And it shows up in every interaction. If we are not alert, if we are not aware, oppression is going to be there. There is a strong tendency to be the one man up. A strong tendency for, even within our own souls, for the most pleasant part of our experience to occupy our minds at the expense of what may not be that pleasant. Therefore, we usually try to distract ourselves from painful realities. So that oppression we need to be very careful about, because it's not just manifested in one form, but in many.
What is the drive to oppress? I think you told me you studied psychology.
Yes.
Are you a psychologist?
Psychologist. Well, I got a doctoral degree in psychology in my own country.
And what country is
Ecuador.
That? Ecuador. Is that the same country that's offering political asylum to a famous truth teller?
Julian Assange, yes. Yeah, one thing.
And whose people are hosting that person in their embassy in London.
That's correct. It's that is correct.
Ecuador is the light to the world.
In that respect.
Yeah.
Well,
that's quite respectful.
Yeah, I appreciate that action of the government of Ecuador. You were asking me a question.
Yeah, what's the drive to oppress? Where does it come from?
I think I can tell you about my own experience, because it is so easy to generalize, and I'm not sure whether our generalizations are completely true. But when I myself in a position oppressing somebody, it is because I'm afraid of losing status. I'm afraid of feeling down. I'm afraid of losing my own identity, falling behind in my competitiveness. And I know that I become freer, and I treat the other person in a way that is also liberating, when I am at peace with myself, when I accept myself, when I understand my limitations, when I understand my fears, when I understand my desires and my yearnings, and when I am okay with it, and when I keep my feet grounded on what is right. You're okay. I am okay. I do not have to put you down to feel good myself. And actually, I feel happy when you are happy, because you and I are also one. We are one. When I am aware of this, and when I forgive myself for my slipping back into the other mode of me against you, and bring myself back to I am all right as who I am, and you are all right too, and we are brothers, and we are one, then I do not need to oppress you anymore.
So what accounts for the scale of the violence and the oppression within this culture, which has become globalized?
I believe there is some innocence to our violence and our oppressive practices. What we have done as human beings, I believe, is to enhance modes of existence that are already in nature. Nature is a constant struggle for survival and for expansion, preservation of space, and so forth. What we have done is to use our tremendous intellectual capacities to multiply the potential of that behavior to magnify that behavior. And so we are just, I do not mean to demean our brothers and sisters, the animals and the plants, but we are basically plants and animals following patterns that already exist in existence before we became humanity. Our task as human beings is to turn around and use our resources of intellectual understanding of things and our understanding of the soul to moderate those tendencies, not to put those tendencies on top in the driver's seat, but on the passenger seat, to consider them, respect them, acknowledge them, accept them for what they are, but use our wisdom, the wisdom that we can have from our understanding, our moral feeling, our ethical sense, and our knowledge, to use that to better conduct ourselves so that we won't destroy our own bed and our own home in our endeavors. Which is what we are doing. It's a tragic thing that the wisest species on earth is doing the dumbest thing, destroying the whole ecosystem on which it depends.
To the extent that it might help people take a perspective for their own behavior and their sense of the culture in which we move, which both directs us and we reinforce through our own activities to the extent that we're conscious of those activities. What do you think, as a person who works in the field of violence mediation, yeah, diminishment?
Thank you, dear. You're so kind. We have this wonderful person here taking care of us in the train. I think we do have the answer. And to paraphrase Bob Dylan, it's in the wind, but the wind is within. The wind of the spirit. The spirit is real. I believe that we as humans have the privilege of being aware of it in a way that, well, I do not know how much animal it is. I believe that the animal has awareness. But we are aware of the spirit. We don't want to call it, call whatever you want, but there is a force for truth. There is a force for justice and for fairness in every person, even the wickedest person, quote-unquote. be aware of that. Pay attention to that, to your heart, to what is true and fair in your heart. Be mindful of it, and do not be afraid of the dark. Look at the dark in the eye, the scary feelings, the scary thoughts, those things that bring you down. Look at them, hold them, understand them, hold them in the light, like people in my faith community would say. Yes.
So we had a little interruption and relocation.
You were talking about McPherson.
Oh, that's right. One of the things he says at the end of a rather disturbing presentation about the facts that he assesses is that we, being alive, have had a great privilege just to be alive. That the odds of being alive, he gives an astronomical figure, like one in hundreds of billions,
yes,
if one considers.
Absolutely, yes.
Right. And that recognition of that privilege, yes, should position us to appreciate what it is we're witnessing play out, as well as how it is we participate in that, how it is we interact with other human beings. Any thoughts on that? You must have thought sometimes that things look bleak.
Absolutely. Actually, it's so important what you're saying, because that attitude of gratefulness, that gratitude, is such an indicator of our being at peace with what is. And our letting that striving fall off by the side, just being at peace and being grateful for the place that we have on this planet, in the universe, for the moment, being grateful and for the fact that we belong to this place, to this planet, to this universe.
So you, because of your education, understand that the system operates by making sure people are not comfortable with that feeling, with that great sense of gratitude for their current state of being.
Yes.
Because of its desire to sell you something.
Absolutely. I was so unhappy for much of my time because I didn't have the right pants. I didn't have the right shirt. I didn't know how. Oh, I didn't even look the way. If I finally got my suit, I was so disappointed because I didn't look the way the guys in the suits in the modeling book look. But of course, I was not like them. They were so handsome. I looked so bad in comparison to them. I was feeling very grouchy and unhappy, yeah, until eventually I came to learn that, yes, it's okay to be the way I am. And I am fine.
That's a good way to end this conversation. This is WZRD Chicago on the Climate Train headed for New York City.